Welcome to the Botcast, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Botcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
Hey, it's Botcast time. Welcome to the March edition of the Botcast with Billy No Mates Nige. I'm here on my own this month. Nobody with me, but do not worry, do not fret. I have something special lined up for you. Let me take you back in time, just a few weeks. It was kind of mid-January, and I was busy preparing all the content for the last EC national event. We called it the Fabulous Festival of Follow-Up, and it was all about converting leads into customers. But as I was putting that content together, what I realised was that all the tactics and all the insights and all the tools that we were sharing on that day, well, they were going to be useless unless or until, as entrepreneurs, we have the time and the capacity to make things happen. And so as a foundation stone for that whole event, I pulled together a brand new talk about getting it all done, getting the right stuff done. And fortunately, I know from the feedback and from the number of messages that I've had, I definitely hit the nail on the head with that opening session. And so when it started to look at, well, what should we do for the March Botcast, I had people who were not able to make the national event. I had some who were at the national event who wanted to get access to a recording. And so, unusually, and without setting any precedents, what the Botcast is this month is the audio recording of my opening, I guess you'd call it a keynote presentation, from the February national event, the one that talks about how we get it all done. Some very, very interesting concepts in here, very useful concepts, and they're things that I haven't talked about or articulated in quite this way before. Now, the slide deck for this presentation is available if you want it in the EC Hub, but you don't need it. This talk, we've played it back, it does make sense as an audio recording. There are a couple of video clips, they're only very short, but again, you get the audio as it comes through here, and again, it will enhance the whole thing and it will make perfect sense to you. And there is a chance that actually this could be one of the most useful podcasts that we've ever produced. There is no banter in it as such. It is the delivery of this presentation from the February National, but I think you're going to enjoy it, and I think you're going to find it really helpful, whether you were there at the event and are therefore hearing it for the second time, or even more so if this is the first airing that your exposure that you've had to it. So that's what we're doing. I hope that makes sense. And without any further ado, this is Nige handing over to Nige at the Fabulous Follow-Up Festival. Enjoy. So you thought your job in business as a marketer is to get leads, right? That's what it is to do. We've got to get customers. Customers come from leads. And the leads, we have a funnel. So we bring inquiries. People inquire. They walk in our shop or our restaurant. They come to our website. They might ring us up. They fill a form, whatever they do. They come in as inquiries. They come through our funnel and they emerge down the bottom as sales. And, the best and easiest way to get more sales is to get more leads and inquiries. Because then we put more in the top of the funnel, more will come out the bottom, right? No, it's wrong. And this has become very evident over the last couple of months in particular, as we started to roll out our Facebook ad service. And what's become very apparent is that people's preparedness to receive leads varies wildly. And we've got some businesses, and we'll share some stories this afternoon with you. Some businesses are very well prepared and handle the leads that come in very, very well indeed. And others handle it at the opposite end of the scale. The way they deal with the leads is in short, woeful. And the truth of it is, for 98.7% of businesses, that is a made-up stat, okay? That is a number I have just made up. But the point is that for 98.7% of businesses, and it will include you, the quickest and easiest and best way to increase your sales will be to get better at handling and managing the leads that you're already getting, or in a lot of cases, that you already have. They're already sat in your business somewhere. And your ability to make sales more easily, quicker, and more effectively will be to handle the leads that you're getting better. And that we'll show you as we go through the day just how factual that is. This is a picture of the Halton Middle School under 11
football team. And that is taken, you wouldn't think so, would you? It's taken in 1978, was that picture. And that is the just before the kickoff of the Wynn Cup final, played at Bradford City's ground. Okay, you'll all remember it, I'm sure. The 78 Wynn Cup final, it was a classic. And that's me there. I was the tall, lanky centre-half, and that's my team. Interestingly, this guy here, who was our captain, that's Stuart McCall, which any footman will know. You'll remember Stuart McCall. He was a class above the rest of us. We lost that match, by the way. We lost 2-1 in the final. But Mr. Baldwin there is our, he was our coach, our teacher. It is interesting. I do remember one match I'd been substituted. And he'd been substituted. And Mr. Baldwin said, Nigel, he said, here's 60p. He says, nip to the news, get me some fags. which I feel sure wouldn't happen these days. But it was happening in 1978. But the thing about Mr. I remember Mr. really, really well. And it was actually interesting, so when I pulled that picture out, because I know everybody on that picture. And you remember things, don't you, from our kids. And Mr. Baldwin's mantra, and because he made us into quite a good football team, and this was why how he did it. This was his mantra. Simple things done well look good. That's what he drilled into us as a football team. Because our training sessions were often very dull because we just passed the ball. Just 5 yards, 10 yards, pass the ball, control it, pass the ball. But he made us into a good football team because we focused on this, on simple things done well, look good. And whilst that was absolutely true for an under-11s football team in 1978, it's also true for all of our businesses today. And so much of what we're going to talk about today, in truth, it isn't. None of it's complex. None of it's complicated. It may appear it sometimes at first sight, but I promise you it isn't. It's all about simple things done well because they look good. And in terms of moving people down your funnel, from when they inquire to making a sale, simple things done well, we'll get you there, whether it's the conversations, the emails, the texts, the stuff you send in the post, the visits, the social media, however you engage with people when they're in your funnel, simple things done well look good. And the problem is, in almost every business, it gets screwed up. That process, how hard can it be to take a lead when it comes in, to turn it into a sale? And it gets screwed up. And in every business, and I would include my business in this, Bananarama syndrome is rife in our business. I've been very particular today to ensure that most of my team are in the room for this session, because there's things that we need to improve and do better here, and the same will definitely be true for you. Bananarama syndrome, by the way, for those of you not familiar with it, they had a big hit, did Bananarama, actually just after the Wynn Cup final. I'm living in the past. I think it's 1983. It ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. That's what gets results. And that's what Bananarama syndrome is, when people do the right things, but they don't do it in the right way, and so the result they get isn't the one that they wanted. And never is that more prevalent than when it comes to follow-up. So we'll come back to Bananarama a bit later on. But acquiring new customers, getting new people to come into your business, it is the most expensive, not to mention in many cases the most difficult thing in any business. When you think about it, so you know that to be true. If it was that easy, if you could all get customers at will, this would be an empty room today. It's a hard thing to do. And once we get someone to somehow show their hand and they're a lead, they're an inquiry or some way, our ability to then move them through to the sales point is really key and can make a big difference. And in that regard, I've gone back and just dug up, this is one of the very original things that we talked about, one of the very early EC national events back in 2011. We talked about the irresistible relationship model. And the principle is very simple. Here comes your prospect, and they'll have a couple of contacts with you. Often they will initiate, certainly the first one. And we can make sales from those, because some people that get in touch are ready to buy straight away. It's very easy to convert them into a customer. So we harvest the low-hanging fruit. And the vast majority, and we get to over half of businesses, don't ever get any further than making a couple of contacts, including lots of you in this room. Contact 3, 2/3 of businesses have given up. They don't go beyond 3 contacts with a lead or inquiry. Get to contact 4, we're heading towards 80% have given up. But for contact 5, you're starting here for the very first time, really, at contact 4 or 5. You're starting to become a factor in your prospect's mind, because they don't remember you the first time they make contact. This repetition that starts to help. So we move on to contact number 6 and number 7 and number 8. Now there's a sense in your prospect's mind that they're starting to get to know you. They understand you. They're becoming familiar with what you're doing. And by contact 9, you're earning genuine kind of top-of-mind awareness for what you do. If you get to contact 10, you're probably the only one left in your market to make 10 contacts with someone that hasn't bought. And at contact 11... well, when they're ready to buy, you've got a 90% chance that they're going to call you. They're going to come and see you at some point. But this, so many businesses' marketing stops at 1 or 2. You know, they do 3, they think it's really good. And 3 is a lot better than 1 or 2, but it's not as good as 9, 10, or 11. And then people already, now you're already starting to think, oh, yeah, but I can't, I'm going to pester people. And this is where it comes back down to Bananarama syndrome, because you could do this wrongly, do this badly, and you absolutely could pester people and put people off. But if you do it well, you'll pull them closer towards you. And we're going to talk through how to do that as we work through. That's why it's called an irresistible relationship model, because it's, the intention is to make you irresistible as a provider of what you do. Because to make that happen is difficult. And Botti rule number 45 says that most business owners won't do the hard stuff that makes the selling easy. Because in that irresistible, when you have got 10 or 11 value-adding, helpful, useful contacts with somebody over a period of time, sometimes a prolonged period of time, it's very easy then for them to come and buy from you. They know you. They trust you. They've got confidence in you. It does make the selling easy, but it's the hard stuff to kind of get there. And most businesses don't do it. And that's okay for us, because most businesses are not here today. Most of your competitors are not here today. So there's an opportunity for you to kind of steal a march. Some of you will remember this. This is just to reinforce the point. This was an article written in 1885. Okay, so over 130 years ago, and the first time people see an ad, they're someone advertising, they don't even see it. The second time, they don't notice it. The third time, they might glance at it. The fourth time, they've got a fleeting sense of having seen it somewhere before. The fifth time, they actually read the ad. Big lesson there for all of us. Just because we've written something and sent it out doesn't mean they're going to read it. Sixth time, they thumb their nose up at it. The seventh time, they're starting to get a bit irritated with it. The eighth time, they start to think, here's that bloody ad again. The ninth time, they wonder if they might be missing out on something. And the tenth time, they ask their friends and neighbours if they've tried it. The 11th time they see the ad, they wonder how the company's paying for all these ads. The 12th time, they start thinking it must be a good product. And the 13th time, they start to see the product's value. The 14th time, they start to remember wanting something like this a long time ago. And the 15th time, they start to yearn for it because they can't afford to buy it. The 16th time, they accept the fact they will buy it sometime in the future. The 17th time, they make a note to buy it. And the 18th time, they curse their poverty for not allowing them to buy this terrific product. The 19th time they see the ad, they count their money very carefully. And the 20th time they see the ad, they buy what is offered. Now, that may have been written 130 years ago, and yes, it's about advertising per se, but if you think that doesn't apply to you and your business, you are bonkers. And the value you'll get from today will be massively diminished, because it matters a lot. So why don't businesses do more to contact people more often in a better, more effective way? Why don't they move them through that irresistible relationship ladder? Well, it's hard work, isn't it? It's the first reason. And people are already busy. You know, I'm very aware that what you've all given up to come here today, because if you'd stayed at home today, you wouldn't have been looking around for stuff to do. Everybody's busy. Some people are frightened. Both ways, they're frightened about what might happen if they start to communicate lots of people, because they might get some complaints or people might talk about them in a different way. Their head will go above the parapet. They can't rely on their anonymity anymore. And some people just don't know how to do it. You know, how could I possibly do that? I can't get my head around how I could communicate with someone 10, 11, 12 times without pissing them off. Well, most business owners don't do the hard stuff that makes the selling easy, but that's what we're going to unpick and unpack today. Because there is, very rarely in business is there a silver bullet. Most things, it doesn't really exist. But I do think in this context today, there is a silver bullet, the most overlooked marketing strategy there is, and it's what today is all about. It's all about the follow-up. And this is why we're going to give such a lot of focus and attention to it today. Just do me a quick favor. Just all stand up a second, would you, please? Just not going to embarrass anybody, but just it'll get the, you know, just stand up for 1 second. And just put your arm up in the air as high as you can, please. Just straight up in the air, reach up high as you can, yeah? And now just push it an inch higher. And there's the problem, you see? There's the problem, okay? You can sit down. Right, the instructions were very clear. Put your arm in the air as high as you can. That was the instruction. And then, as I said, go an inch higher, you all did. The whole room moved an inch higher en masse. How can that be the case if you'd already put it as high as you can? And that's the point. As far as follow-up is concerned, in your business, you're giving up too early. Whatever follow-up you're doing now, if you just do a little bit more, you'll see exponential in some cases, not in every case, but in some cases, an exponential uplift in the sales that you'll get down the bottom of your funnel. But it involves doing the hard work that makes the selling easy. And only you know whether you're prepared to do that or not. I ran a course a couple of weeks ago on the rhythmic acquisition of customers. We spent a whole day on the rhythmic acquisition of customers. This is a phrase that I coined a couple of years ago because in many ways it's like the holy grail for any business. If you can get customers coming in consistently, predictably, reliably, if you've got the rhythm that works for you, everything else in business is sortable and fixable. If you think about it, how immeasurably different your life would be if you had the rhythmic acquisition of customers. And it's possible and it's doable for every single one of your businesses. But there's a precursor to the rhythmic acquisition of customers because it's always preceded by rhythmic activity to get customers. There's always stuff going on to generate the out. There's inputs that go on to generate the output. Rhythmic acquisition of customers is always preceded by rhythmic activity to get customers. And that will include the follow-up. Because it doesn't, the rhythmic acquisition of customers, it's not rhythmic acquisition of leads, it's rhythmic acquisition of customers. Customers come out the bottom of the funnel. They don't just go in the top. And the rhythmic activity can be the stuff that's going on in the funnel to get them out of the bottom. Again, most business owners won't do the stuff, the hard stuff, that makes the selling easy. But you can, and we're going to put the foundations in place. And one of the most important foundations, actually, is how on earth do you find the time to get it all done? And I've pulled on a number of conversations and inputs over the last year, really, in truth, to pull this next little session together for you. But this, hopefully, if I do my job properly in the next half hour, this will help you hugely to take the stuff we've got for this afternoon and get it done in your business. Because it's only the implementation of the stuff that we've got for you today that will actually make the difference. The implementation can become the rhythmic activity, and the output then becomes the rhythmic acquisition of customers. So how do we get it all done? So the first thing, we've got to keep things simple, and I will keep it very simple today, just like Mr. Baldwin did for us young lads trying to learn football all those years ago. So we're going to keep things simple, as are you when you get back to base. You're not going to get yourself overcomplicated. We're going to be very specific on what we're going to do, and I've been very, very specific for you today. Even I'm going to end this afternoon with a 9-point checklist that for many of you would be the 9 most important things that from today that will be your follow-up checklist. And then you've got to actually do it, okay? So we're going to keep it simple, be very specific, and you've got to actually do the stuff. And there's a big secret to getting the right stuff done in your business. And I haven't talked about this before, and it's a little phrase that I'm hoping and planning to make a real core part of the kind of EC lexicon as we move forward. It becomes as well known as Bananarama syndrome. It also begins with a B. The big secret is binary thinking. Now, interesting, I've just realised actually, Mr. Baldwin, our football coach, was also our maths teacher. That's a bit of a coincidence. And he never taught me anything to do with binary at all, as I recall. But binary code is all, it's all ones and zeros. Yeah, we know that much at least. Things are black and white in binary. And binary thinking is when you think like that. You think in absolutes. You eliminate the grey. Everything is black or white. What do you mean, Nigel? Let me give you some examples, okay? So binary thinking, you're either measurably moving towards your goal or you are failing, because standing still is still failure because you're losing time. So the keyword there, measurably, is in block capitals, okay? A better example, perhaps. So in my world, okay, there are two types of people in my world, members and non-members, okay? Guess where all my focus and attention and time goes? Binary thinking. There are only two activities for those of us in business that we should be doing. We do activities that measurably yield money, key word there, measurably yield money, and there's those that don't. Binary thinking, that's where you should focus. Focus on the activities that yield money. Now, it's very easy to kid yourself on this one, because you can forge some Heath Robinson-esque, convoluted, complex link between the need for you to post that Twitter message now and what might come from it, and eventually, if things go on, because there needs to be a degree of rigor in your thought processes here. But if you start, I guess, and here's what I'm doing now, measurably yielding money or not, you'll start to look very interestingly at how you're spending your day. In terms of binary thinking, as a business, you are either making money or you are losing money. There is no grey area in that context. And a lot of people, again, some in this room, are telling themselves that the validity and the sustainability of their business, or sometimes don't even know, because they've no idea whether it's black or white. So that would be a very poor place to be. And things that you do, activity that you do, either energizes you, makes you feel better, puts you, you know, you're doing your best stuff, or it doesn't. Binary thinking extends to that side of work and life as well. Binary thinking, things are a yes or a no. There shouldn't be a think about it. There shouldn't be a little thing on that tomorrow, because that slows you down in business. That's going to get in the way of implementation, because there is no middle ground, not really. And binary thinking, and I'll come back to it a few times today, around binary thinking. And if you can get yourself into this mode of thinking black and white, one or zero, yes or no, binary thinking will help you hugely to get a lot more of the right stuff done. Now, for that to kind of resonate and get anchored deep in your minds, we've got to tackle one or two key beliefs. I've got three or four of these for you today. And this is the first one. This is one of the original Botti rules, is this. The Botti rule said, you're either growing or dying. There is no status quo. And that's true. And as business, and we have to recognize and accept that there is no such thing in truth as being stationary. Because no matter what market we're in, the things are growing. Our market share, if we are stationary, our market share is dropping. Certainly from an inflation perspective, we're down. There's all sorts of reasons why. So we need to recognize we are either growing or we are shrinking and dying. There is no status quo. And in order to consistently grow, you do have to become mercilessly honest with yourself. I talked in the breakfast meeting, the Q&A this morning, about one particular part of my business, which we're going to have to take some clear action on, because it's not working to the extent that it should. When you're looking at your business, good question to ask. You know, does this activity, forget the division, does what I'm doing, how I'm spending my time now, today, this morning, does this activity make me money or not? Because that would be binary thinking. When you look at your team that are working with you in your business, is this person, are they contributing what I want, or are they taking away? Because that's binary thinking. Here's a good one. If I keep up the habits that I've got now for the next 10 years, where will they take me? Because that's binary thinking. We'll talk about that in a moment or two. Is this particular relationship, whoever it may be with, or even an organization, is it moving me forward or is it moving me backwards? Could be a supplier even, because that's binary thinking. Does this energize or drain me? We've covered that one. Am I tolerating something that I should be eliminating from my life? This will definitely apply. And this is why it's an important foundation for what the whole follow-up piece, because if you've got stuff, some of these answers here are not the right ones, as it were, this is what's going to stop you doing the right stuff. This is what gets you to do the hard stuff that makes the selling easy. And if you don't tackle these issues, you're going to get stuck in the treacle and the shit of life. Talking of shit, here's a fact. The more of it you tolerate, the less money you make. The number of people in EC, there are some of you in this room now, you've got great, some of you got really sad stories. Some of you got fantastic lists of excuses as to why you're not yet where you want to be. And this will underpin it for many of those people. you're tolerating too much shit. We have to get rid of the shit to enable us to do the other stuff. The more shit you tolerate, the less happy you'll be as well. And you know that to be true. You know that to be true. And then someone said, oh, Nigel, I get all this. I understand all this, but I'm just overwhelmed. Overwhelmed is a word we hear a lot within EC. Let's look at how you overcome overwhelm. Here's a fact. You might not like it, but I promise you it's a fact. If you feel overwhelmed, it is always a symptom of a bigger problem. The problem is not overwhelm. There's something else causing the problem, causing the overwhelm. What causes overwhelm? Well, there's a few things. The first one is a lack of clear-cut objectives. Okay, if the fire alarm rang now, what would we do? Let's assume it rang for a minute. Okay, we'd leave the building, wouldn't we? We would get out. Okay, we wouldn't feel overwhelmed. We wouldn't worry about, oh, missing Nigel's present. Oh, what am I going to do? Because we've got a clear objective, because the building's on fire and we've got to get out. Binary thinking, that. Binary thinking. One of the reasons why, when you turn up at work in the morning and you look at all the things you could do, because that list is long and it will always be long forever. As long as you are alive and working in your business, I promise you, every single morning, there will always be a list of things that you could do. That list will never, ever go away. The trick is to work out the things that you should do, and the trick to working that out is to have crystal clear objectives. If you haven't got clear objectives, overwhelm seeps up really, really quickly and really, really easily. The overwhelm is a symptom. The problem is the lack of clear-cut objectives. The second thing then that comes on the back of the objective piece that causes overwhelm, because the stuff that you want to do, but you haven't got a timed target against it. And I'll show you some examples of this a bit later on as well, because so many people have got big kind of dreams, but there's no sense of urgency. And when it doesn't matter whether you launch something this week or next week or get the letter out or publish that flyer and print it, when you haven't got the timed target, that list of all things that you could do today becomes even bigger because more things come in there. Even though you've got the objectives, yeah, but there's no time on that. I could do this, could do that. And the overwhelm seeps up. And it does overwhelm you. So a lack of timed targets is really clear in our business. You know, and sometimes it's why, as a business, we're a proper Marmite place to work. Because people that come and work for me, a lot of people in my team will tell you it's a fantastic place to work because but there are very clear targets and times and things adjust and they change, often quite frequently. And for some people, that's just terrible. That's a horrible, worst place in the world to work. But if you work in our business, there's going to be time targets. There's half a dozen of my team today who are not here today. They're in the office because there's some deliverables that have got to get hit for Wednesday, and they can't be here today because there's a timed target. Now, they're not overwhelmed today because it's very, very clear what they've got to do. And the report that I get tonight when they leave the office and email me tonight will tell them precisely as to whether, because they've got timed targets. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, 50p says you ain't got clear objectives and you definitely ain't got timed targets. Because with a clear objective and a timed target, because the building's on fire, leave now, we'd all leave. No one would feel overwhelmed. Now, objectives and time targets come from planning. And too few businesses properly plan. They've no idea, really. We've got some notional thing, it'd be great to grow, but the level of depth of planning, because when you do the planning, that's when you work a lot of things out. I'll show you one of my plans in a moment or two, and how we pull things together, how we make things happen. And I'll talk it through there in terms of what's got to happen by when, and it looks a really messy slide when I show it to you, but there's planning that's happened. Because when you've got planning, and you've got objectives, and you've got a timed deadlines for those objectives, then you get focus. And if you've got a lack of focus, that list of all the things that you could do today, I can see how it becomes really overwhelming. Because there's no focus that can come from the plan or the objectives to tell you which ones are most important. Now, I've got some tools, by the way, to help you crack all this in a minute. Because there's even more reasons for overwhelm. So we've got a lack of objectives, a lack of a time plan. We've got lack of planning, lack of focus. People don't have a system for productivity in terms of what they do on a particular day, let alone when they do it. They haven't got it. Very rare. I can't think of an instance. I'm not saying it's never happened, but I can't think of one when a business owner who does their 90 minutes every day has ever said they felt overwhelmed. Because just the process of doing your 90 minutes forces you to plan. It gives you, because you know what you're going to do in the 90 minutes today, because there was a plan that you did in the 90 minutes last week. And the plan that gives you a focus. When you come in today, you've got to do the foot, and that's, now the overwhelm has disappeared because there's clarity as to what you want to do. There's a system for productivity. Distraction causes overwhelm. And never has there been a time when it's, you know, there's never ever been such massive potential for distraction. So many things that we could and should be doing now. But overwhelm is always a symptom of a bigger problem. And our ability to deal with the distractions, to shut the door, to lock people out, to turn the phone off, to close down the email, to not log on to Facebook. All these things that seep us away, and it's very easy, because then you see someone, oh, I could do that. Very, very easy for the list of things, even if it's not a physical list, it's in your head, the list of things that you could be doing. Oh my God, it's so big, I can't do all this, I'm overwhelmed. Lack of plan, lack of objectives, lack of time target, they're the real causes. If we can get down into that, spend half a day getting into that, we can start to deal with it. Of course, to tackle all those things, you need discipline. There needs to be a degree of discipline. This was said in one of my mastermind groups recently. There is no victory without discipline. I'd like to attribute that to Mr. Baldwin and my football team, but he never said that. He probably would if he saw it now. There's no victory without discipline. I think it's the second governing belief. There is no victory in business without discipline. Your ability to do the hard stuff that will make the selling easy will require discipline. It will require you to do things that may not naturally be where you want to do. It will require you to do the planning, to have the objectives, to have the time targets, to put in place things there. Because here's the thing, right? This is quite profound for me. Frank Kern taught me this, that your life is the sum total of your days. We can all agree with that. That's a kind of truism. It's a statement of fact. Our life, for all of us, however many days it is, that's what it is. Now, our days are the sum total of our daily actions. Because what we do is the sum of our daily actions. And our daily actions are the result, or not, of the cultivation of our daily habits. Because there's certain things we get to do. Now, we get to choose whether we toss off or whether we get serious about this. Because our failure to cultivate daily habits will have an impact in the same way as our proactive cultivation of them will as well. Little question, it's a rhetorical question, you know, but do you have millionaire habits? Is the way you spend your day going to get you to where you want to be? How congruent are the behaviours that you are living on a daily basis to getting you to where you want to get to? Because we've got to somehow unplug this if we're going to make it going forward. And here's the thing, right? Belief number three, if you are not deeply conscious, not just conscious, but deeply conscious of your daily habits and actions, then other people are exerting control on your life and therefore on your business. And if we apply binary thinking to that statement, then it means that you are either completely free or you are enslaved. And too many entrepreneurs perceive themselves, and their actions and behaviours on a daily basis reinforce it, that they are actually enslaved to other people. And let's explore that then a bit more. How do you mean that? Well, because cultivating that discipline, it's not that hard to cultivate that discipline once you stop listening to your own bullshit. Because we do, there's a lot of that goes on in our heads. So how do we take control? I've got seven steps here that I think will hopefully help you to take control and cultivate the right daily habits. So the first one is, you've got to schedule your day. You have got to schedule your day. Not anybody else. You don't open up your diary to anybody. You're not instantly available on a whim. You are going to schedule your day. You're going to decide. And if you recognize now, recognize absolutely right now, that if next week you don't do your 90 minutes, that is your decision. It's nobody else's decision. It's nobody else, whether you took it consciously or subconsciously, because it's within all of our grasp. None of us has got a boss telling us what we've got to do. How we schedule our day, what time from the moment we wake up, you know, indeed, what time we set the alarm clock for is first part of it, to what we actually do. We are in control of that. And we can take control and start to schedule our day. I'll show you a little tool in a minute to how to schedule it. You have to get real about time. Things always take longer than we think. When we do our time planning, I'm the worst at this. I never, you know, it's a classic Lion King song. There's more to do than can ever be done. And I never ever get to the end of my list on a day. But I kind of recognize that and I'm reconciled to it. And I do get a hell of a long way down it. And the other stuff rolls over and gets happened tomorrow. But let's get real about, so we're going to schedule our day. We're going to get real about the time. And by the way, the more you start to get proactive in scheduling your day, the better you get over time at allowing the right amounts of time to do the stuff that needs to be done. A lot of it will be in the follow-up today, because that's the best way to grow your sales, set the existing leads and get them down your pipe. The third step then to take control is identify the stuff that makes you money. Identify the things that are most important and do them. Now, I do recognize, again, none of you here are deliberately doing stuff that doesn't make money. There will be a link of some sort, no matter how convoluted, between every single thing you do and the money that you make. Your ability here to think clearly around this and apply binary thinking to two or three levels will be the key that will make this right. But if you start to identify the stuff that makes you money and you start to do that, and you start to schedule the time for that and allow the right amount of time to do that, you'll start to make more money. If you allow other things to get in the way, because they are important in the whole picture and what I'm looking at doing, my brand is really important, I want to look it all right and get all that nice and tidy before I put the flyer out or the leaflet out, recognize, fine, you can choose to do that, but everything comes at a price. And the price you pay will be reduced sales. Less people coming into your funnel, less people coming out the funnel. Take control by using frameworks. And some people, we produce a lot of marketing. Most of the stuff that we produce comes across my desk at some point. A lot of it starts on my desk. I never, ever nowadays, I can't think when I last did it. It's years ago since I started to create a piece of marketing from scratch. Because all marketing has frameworks. There's like recipes, there's like a manual. I mean, it's all sat in the EC hub. I mean, there's so many templates and examples and things why we share stuff in the. But there's no reason why my swipe file is such the most important thing. If I'm in my office and it catches fire, the one thing I'm grabbing is my swipe file, because my swipe file is worth a fortune to me. Because in there is all my collection of good stuff that works over the years. But you've got it as well. You've got access to that. And frameworks help to accelerate the speed to get things done. If you've got to write a sales letter or write a video script, that's hard if you've got a blank piece of paper. Don't start with a blank piece of paper. Start with something else. Another benefit of being in one of the coaching groups, because if you haven't got it, someone else will have. You know, many a time I've sent my masterminders scripts that I've used, or here's a template of this. They've got access to my swipe file. So that's a big part of taking control, because it starts to minimize and reduce the scale and the amount of work that's required to get these things done. Systems help as well, because everything can have systems. Without systems, things are really hard to do. But there is a system. Our magazine, I'm going to talk about newsletters this afternoon, because they're a really great follow-up initiative. And when I talk about them, I might share. And we have a system we produce a 44-page magazine every month. And it happens really, I've got to be careful how I say this, but almost without any work. It just kind of happens. It happens with as much effort as you took to drive here this morning. So there is work that happens, but because there's a formula to it. There are 32 elements to our circular, 32 elements. And someone in the team has responsibility for each one, but no one has got responsibility for more than a few. I think I'm the most, and I've got seven of them are mine. Okay, but my seven, I know what I'm doing. And I've got a system. And I've got a little slot in my diary of between 2.5 and 3 hours in the afternoon in the first week of the month. I think it's on Thursday this week I write the March circular. But that's okay, because I know what I've got. I know what my seven bits are, and as I go through the month, my antennae are tuned, and I send little emails to myself as little ideas, and when I sit down and I will shut my door on Thursday afternoon, and in 2.5 hours, I will write my seven elements for the March circular, and it's done. Andrew is our designer. He has to lay it all out, so he's got the timetable, everybody, to get all the content. Everyone knows what the deadline is to get everything in. All our contributors send it all in. Andrew collates it. He drops it on certain pages. He's now been doing it for over a year, so there's all sorts of templates to the pages. He all drops in, he has it for 2 days. And then out of it emerges this circuit, just emerges, and we produce a 44-page magazine, which is a key part of our business, but there is a system for it. You have systems in your business. You know, whatever you're doing, whether it's, you know, whether you're taking orders or collecting money, there's systems in there, and systems slash the amount of time required to get things done, and they can become a part of your cultivated daily habits. All those things there have got systems in our business as to how we get them done. But from a marketing perspective, when marketing is not your natural space, you may, well, how do I get these systems in place? Well, again, we can help you with that. That's what EC is here to do, but you've got to recognize that you need help in doing that and putting those systems in place. Chunking things down is a great way to take control. If you've got a big job, you break it down into smaller pieces. When we run Facebook ads for people, we don't talk about running Facebook ads. We've broken it down into the eight elements there. So we define your audience, you create an offer, you write the ad copy, you find the images that grab attention, you then run a test, you then analyze and optimize, then you go live, then at the end of the review, you review it. If it's working well, you run it again. If it's not working well, you start again, and you go around it. Now, that's a great example of chunking, because we took running Facebook ads and chunked it down. Now, if you're doing this yourself, now you know what you've got to do tomorrow is let's get clear on the audience. Let's not worry about running the ads tomorrow. Let's just define the audience tomorrow, and then on Wednesday, we can craft the offer. And on Thursday, I can write the copy. And on Friday, I can find some images. And I can start my test on Saturday. And I can run the test for 10 days. Then I can review the results. Now we've got some momentum. We're starting to move things through by chunking things down. Because the whole big thing about running a Facebook ad campaign is kind of big and scary. And your ability to chunk things down into smaller bits will play a big part in how much you get things done. Then we come to number 7. And I mentioned planning earlier on in terms of a cause of overwhelm. And if we want to really completely obliterate overwhelm from your life, then we get to proactive planning. This is a very, very big deal. Very, very big deal indeed. And I want to tell you a little story now. It's got absolutely nothing to do with business whatsoever. But I, of an evening, when I get home, most days, Sue and I, at some point when we've had our meal and you know, the kids are sorted or whatever else. At some point, most days, we will sit down and we will watch a bit of telly. And like many people, I'm guessing now, I mean, I'm very fussy about what I watch, but obviously this whole arrival of, on-demand stuff has changed the way the nation watches telly. And I never, very rarely watch live telly now, but I do watch a program most nights. And about 3 weeks ago, I quite fancy we'd watched The Crown. We watched that over Christmas. We'd not seen it before, but over the kind of Christmas break, we watched for the first two series of The Crown. And so kind of mid-January time, need something else to watch. And I'd heard about Designated Survivor, which, has anyone seen Designated Survivor? A few of you, not that many actually, okay. Designated Survivor is on Netflix. And you need to know this, where I'm going. I've got something to show you in a minute. So Designated Survivor is the concept's fantastic. Kiefer Sutherland plays the main character. And when the series starts, in the first episode, he is the most junior member of the cabinet in the US. So he's the most junior member of the US cabinet. And the series starts on the State of the Nation Day, which, of course, happened last week, was Trump's first State of the Nation. And on the State of the Nation Day, everybody in America, all the House, all the congressmen, House representatives, all the Senate, and the Supreme Court judges, and the President, everyone is in the Capitol for the State of the Nation address. And what does happen in true life is that one member of the cabinet does not go to the Capitol, and they have to be outside of Washington, and they have to watch the Senate on TV, because they are the designated survivor in case something awful was to happen. And in the very first episode, I'm not giving much away here, but in the very first episode, he's the designated survivor, and the Capitol gets blown up, and everybody in it dies. So the President, all the cabinet, all the senators are dead, all the congressmen are dead, everyone is dead, and this junior cabinet minister, who's not a politician either, it's a long story, and Kiefer Sutherland is left. And from this, he has to pull back, and because his problems are only just beginning. And that's the concept for the whole series. And it's really, really good, and we enjoyed it a lot. And we started to watch it, and got to watching an episode every night, and a couple of nights we actually watched two episodes, which felt like really cheeky. And I've never ever binge watched anything, so we till this I really enjoyed designated survivor. And in episode 14, okay, there's a little clip. I'm going to show you this little clip now. And so Kiefer Sutherland, you all know Kiefer Sutherland. So Kiefer Sutherland is the president, okay? And this is this what this clip that I'm going to show you happens something like 2 or 3 months after that fateful night when the Capitol's all been blown up. And he gets this guy to come to see him. And the guy that comes to see him is a previous president, okay, from a few years ago. His name is President Moss. And he gets him to come and see him. Now, I've edited it slightly. I put a little clip in it. But I'm going to show you this clip. It's only 2 minutes that I'm going to show you. So the new president, Kiefer Sutherland, has taken over America, this massive tragedy. He's in the Oval Office. He's been president for like 8 or 9 weeks. And one of his predecessors, he's invited him back in to see him. And this is what happens, okay?
Mr. President. President Moss.
Mr. President, it's an honor to have you here, sir. Thank you, Ava.
View never gets old, does it?
I don't know. I haven't been here that long yet.
Indeed.
I can't tell you how special it is to finally meet you face to face. And I want you to know that I am open to hearing any advice that you have to offer. I look up to you, sir. And I would love to hear how you think I'm doing so far.
No, you wouldn't.
I'm sorry?
Total honesty?
Yes, always.
You were handed an impossible job, son. A political non-entity, never ran for office, never served in uniform, suddenly thrust into the most powerful job in the world during an unprecedented crisis. Hell, you shouldn't have expected much of yourself. And the people shouldn't have either.
Well, I asked for honesty.
Well, don't get me wrong. You've made some great strides. I give you a passing grade, Professor. But the handling of Mahid Nassar, well, you let the Russians play like a fiddle when it came to that damn track coach. Not to mention our late vice president ordering the FBI to kill the man who tried to kill you. Company scuttlebutt is that was no coincidence.
That's an ongoing investigation, sir.
No, I get it. Believe me, I do. Running this country is the hardest job there is. Problem is, with everything that's been flying at you, you're not actually running it. You're reacting, not leading.
That's my point, okay? And I stopped it, and I said, stop, pause. And I got this clip off here. Because I was preparing this talk. And this is what life is like for us. Okay, this is us.
You're reacting, not leading.
That's what we do in our business. That's what's keeping us from where we want to get to. Because we react to everything. If when you watch the series, he ran through all those different things, the track coach and the Nasir Azhar, all these things happened. And the president, every day, there's so much shit flies at him that he has to deal with, just like there is for us in business. And what we do is we get really good at reacting to all the shit that comes at us. But binary thinking, when we're reacting, we're not leading. You're either reacting or you're leading. We have to, as business owners, we have to take control. That's what this is all about. The stuff I got this afternoon, the follow-up stuff, it won't matter unless you take control. You have to lead, not react.
You're reacting. Not leading.
You are reacting, not leading. So your first mission is to, well, what does that mean then? Because there is all this shit and all those little incidents that the president has to deal with. In their moment, they were all important. But in the big picture, in terms of getting his country and his presidency on track to where he wants it to be, they didn't really matter. The diplomatic incident over the athletics coach who was a double agent doesn't really matter in the whole scheme of things. And this is, for me, it was such a massively perfect analogy. Because that's what we've all got all this stuff to do. But when we're doing the stuff that's coming at us from other people, we're reacting, we're not leading. And when we spend our entire lives reacting, not leading, we end up in the same place. And we work hard, and we're really busy, and we're really conscientious and committed to what we're doing, but we're not moving forward, and we're not making progress. So our first mission, we have to work out what is really productive in our business. And to work out what's really productive...
You're reacting, not leading.
Got to get into leadership mode. Truly productive, absolute binary thinking applies here. Is this measurably moving me forward, or is it killing me? To be truly productive, we have to stop trying to do too many things at once. I am liberated right now compared to where I've been at any point over the last 18 months. And the reason I'm liberated is because I took some decisions in the summer last year, in truth. I couldn't implement them till the end of the year because I have reduced the number of mastermind inner circle groups by half that I do. And I've done it because I need to become truly productive in my own business. And I couldn't be because I was giving too much of me to them. So I needed to pull it back. And that's what I've done. And now it's fantastic because I now have, you know, for the whole last year, I had to basically run my business and move it forward on a single day a week, pretty much. But now I've got three, I had 4 days last week, 4 days. You have no idea what that was like. It was so liberating. I was able to lead and not react. Most of the stuff that we do on a day-to-day basis, in truth, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. If we go back to the classic, you know, when we're at the end of our time in business, you know, picture yourself on your deathbed if it helps. You know, but when we look back on our lives, what picture do we want to see? What do we want to talk about? And I guarantee you, in there will not be the shit that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Most of the stuff we do on a day-to-day basis doesn't matter. And your ability to be able to first accept and recognize that, secondly, then clear the time, get through the fog, clear the time so you can focus on the very small number of things that will make a big difference, that will make you truly productive. I spoke at the last national event about how we damage our capacity by distracting ourselves all the time because we take on too much. And somehow we can, because we are superior beings as entrepreneurs. There is no doubt at all in my mind about that. You know, our place on the kind of pinnacle of mankind, you know, we are way above anybody else. And we shouldn't worry about, internally at least, kind of recognizing that. But just because we can do the stuff and we can deal with all this thing, we can react really well, doesn't mean it's what we should be doing. You know, often, I see this repeatedly, so many people, you know, our perfectionism causes us to perform worse because it slows us down and it holds us up. It causes angst and stress on its own accord because, in truth, it doesn't matter. The vast majority of things that we do, we don't have to be perfect. We do all sorts of stuff, don't we? We answer emails and post on social media and talk on the phone and we set up Google Alerts and we react to them, we talk with our staff and we check our bank account, we look at all the numbers. Binary thinking will say, they're not good daily habits. When you're doing that sort of thing, we are...
You react, not leading.
That's true, what we should be doing. There are only three things I think we should be doing. We should be selling and marketing, getting that funnel sorted, fulfilling, because we do have work to do to fulfill for our customers. I get that. And we should be creating new stuff to take us to the next level. It's as simple as that, really. I have three pots. I've got three pots. I have my fulfilling days. Today's a fulfilling day for me. I have to be here today. It's part of me. This is me delivering. It's part of my job. It's a fulfilling day for me. I've got another one tomorrow with an inner circle group. But on Wednesday, it's a selling and marketing day. And on Thursday, it's a selling and marketing day. And on Friday, it's a creating new stuff day. Because we've got to get the balance. We have to get the balance. Here's the thing. Our income, all of us, our income is directly proportionate to the number of offers that we make. When I say offer, I mean the number of times we invite people to buy our stuff. Okay, I don't have to be a discount, but a number of times we ask people to buy our stuff. And if you accept that principle, and I promise you that's true, then what we should be doing, like every week, like every day, is making more, let's invite more people to buy some more stuff. That irresistible customer model is starting to come in now. When we're doing this sort of thing, what are we doing, President?
Reacting, not leading.
I'm going to get this message in because so much of our time is spent reacting, not leading. Take control of this stuff. Recognize the scale and the impact that it has. So once we understand what we should be doing, we've then got to schedule it. And again, this is where so many people let themselves down.
You're reacting, not leading.
Because you get to the list, right? That's what I need to do. But now we don't schedule it. And if we don't schedule it, it doesn't get done. We've all had days, sometimes five in a week you've had, when you know exactly what you've got to get done today, but other stuff gets in the way. So we didn't have the scheduling done, we had the clarity on the stuff, but other shit got in the way. Now, occasionally it happens, but here's the way to get yourself scheduled properly, okay? And you can't do this till we're finished this afternoon, because I've got such a lot of stuff for you. But you want to look at the next 2 weeks, forget the rest of the year. Just look at the end of tonight, look at the next 2 weeks. This is a definite kind of write it down, these little three things. If you look at everything that you want or need to accomplish when you're in leadership mode, not reacting mode, look at the things that you want to accomplish in the next 2 weeks and write them down, okay? And write them in the best logical order you can in terms of the order that they need to be done. Now, straight away, the old one will start to disappear a little bit at this point, because when you start to put the right criteria on it, your list might be quite big, but even so, we can still see it now, and we can now see an order that things need to be done in. And then we start to put a hard deadline on each thing. So we start to look now in the order, so when's that going to get finished by? When's that going to get finished by? If necessary, chunk the big things into smaller things. It might make your list a bit longer, but chunk it into smaller things. In November, I took my team away to my house in Cornwall, and 13 of us went down there. And 13 went down, only 10 came back. But they all came back. no one drowned. But we went down to Cornwall for 2 nights, 3 days we were down there. And while we were there, we conceived what came to be known as Lead Cycle. And it wasn't that way until we actually got to Cornwall. And we did exactly this list. On the final afternoon in Cornwall, and we did exactly chunk it down, and we left Cornwall with that. I don't expect you to read that, but what that actually that's on a flip chart size piece of paper, okay? And it starts in the top left, right up there, with buying some domains, and there's a sales website, and there's some terms and conditions. And then there's a checkout order form, and people can buy it. And then there's all the confirmation emails and the invoice email. And then there's the thank you page, which needs an appointment call page, so you can book your setup call. And they've got an email if they're not booked, and chase that bit through as well. And there's all the appointment call settings that need to happen. And then you have to, there's an email to confirm all the details of the call. And then we've got to synchronize all the pre-call prep has to go out. And the call happens here. And then we need to be call guidelines for doing the call. All things we need to access on the back of the call. And then after the setup call, it all you get the drift. We broke down. That's an entire business there, in truth, broken down on a single sheet of paper. And what you can see, don't worry about the detail, what you can see underneath it all in the red is the person is who's responsible for it. And so the work was spread, in truth, across about five people, that's all. It wasn't the whole team involved in making this happen. But everything on that sheet happened in 2 weeks. So we went from conception to having a business ready to launch in 2 weeks. But we did it because we'd just done what I said there. Because we listed everything out. That's our list, effectively. This is actually the order. There's a flow here. What I need to make sure we didn't miss anything. But that's kind of the order that they need to be done in as well. And we chunked all the different elements down. And then we started to individually then schedule it so that we all had our different bits to do. And we started to schedule it. And the way you then get work done, what we then did, we then started to chunk out the five of us that were doing the work on this project, and we had hours in the day where we did nothing but work on those little projects. And that's what you need to do with your list now that you've got, because you've just got the list of the most important things that you want to happen in your business when you are leading, that when you're in that mode, these are the things I get done in the next 2 weeks. They are in order. And now I'm going to create some time blocks then. And it might not be every single day, because there's days when you can't do stuff. But over the course of a fortnight, you're going to find chunks of time when you are going to do nothing but work on those activities in their proper order. Once you've got this list, by the way, it's a lot, lot easier to involve your team in helping you to make these things happen. And so a timetable starts to emerge. And what we had was a timetable that we knew where we should be at every single day. And what we had a little 10-minute stand-up meeting either at the end of every day or at 8:30 at the start of the morning, because we reviewed where we were against our end times. And this comes into another piece then. This is a really important kind of foundation block that not enough people are doing, and they're paying a heavy price because they're not wanting to be in their business, because today ain't over until tomorrow's planned. You know, it's another original kind of botty rule. And I haven't gone home from work for in 15 years without knowing what I've got to work on tomorrow, the list is set up. And what, this is a little interesting piece that we'll share this with you. These are the sheets now that are used. And Cameron takes a lot of credit for this because Cameron picked up how important, he designed this sheet himself. He took input from a number of different areas. And so what he's got here, today's key projects, scheduled events happening here. And this is his schedule. It starts there at 8:30 and it runs through to 6:30. So he puts the tasks that he's got to get done to down here, and then he allocates time in his day. Obviously, his coloured pens show what's doing what, where he's doing when now. And this is the model that we utilise to get such a lot of stuff done. And you can use this as well. By the way, I will make the slides from this particular part of the day and these sheets, they'll be available to you as a download. It'll probably be Wednesday. I won't overpromise on it, but they'll be available to all of you that are here today. And you can get these sheets. You need to order some coloured pens, but I've also got you covered on that this afternoon as well, in terms of how we make it work. Because you need a system like this to keep on schedule. And it's really easy. Like when Cameron or Joe have their sheets on their desk, it's a lot harder to interrupt them because they've got their schedule. Now, they only do this, this is done usually last thing before they go home. Occasionally, they'll do it first thing in the morning when they come in. But everybody can see what they've got to be doing today. You can look across and find the purple and see where it fits in the plumbing. There's no one's got the stuff. And when you've got this level of clarity, you are able to lead, not react. You can mobilize your people to help you to lead and not react. And you make progress. As he goes through the day, we cross things off with the big black piece of the disappear. And that was a great day. Everything got done. Now, once you've got that, we've got the clarity of what our tasks are to be done, we've now scheduling them properly. So we're not leaving it to we're going to do our best today from some arbitrary list or things that are flying around in our head. We've got it down on a piece of paper. Our next mission then is to eliminate the distractions. This is not difficult once you're in the right mode. You know what mode you need to be in?
React. Not leading.
We're going to lead. We're not going to react. So, as far as distractions are concerned and getting rid of them, it is good to be selfish. Selfish is good for other people. I've realised I'm reconciled to this now. So here's how it goes. Like most people here, not everybody, might say, I want to do great in my business. I want to create a legacy for my kids because my kids are so important to me. And I kind of get that. And then what happens is I allow my kids to distract my working day because they're important. Yeah, I get that too. But because you choose to let them distract your day, that diminishes your ability to create a legacy. And the thing goes in a vicious circle. At some point, we need to have selfish time. We need to eliminate distractions. So that comes from deciding who and what gets your attention during work time. And you're going to need to apply binary thinking. Are the people that are getting your attention helping you get where you want to get to? Or are they taking you away from it? Because there's no middle ground. They're either helping or they're not. You have to stand firm and keep all the others out. Keep all the others out. You do not need to be available on the end of a phone all day. Nobody does. You need to stay focused on right now. Because right now, this minute and the next five that are coming up, they're the only things you can control. So get focused on them. The four big distractions that cost you a lot of money are social media. And I speak now as someone that's, we're getting better returns on our Facebook advertising than we've ever got on anything ever. But I ain't posting stuff. I'm not getting distracted by it at all. I'm utilising it as an ad platform to build our business. But there's a lot of people in this room paying a very heavy price for the wonderful profiles that you're building and all the relationships you've got on social media. And if you apply binary thinking, a good number of you should stop it. The phone is a big distraction because you're too accessible. It's not difficult to... I do reckon we need to talk to people, and we need to make phone calls, and that's fine. But that doesn't mean you have to be available when someone else wants you. And your ability to lead and not react will and that require you to tame properly the phone. And there's people here that can help you do that, whether you talk to Graham or Jackie or Emma at lunchtime. The screen is a big distraction because it's so easy to go off on other stuff, isn't it? To follow the trail. Whether it's the screen on your phone or it's the screen on your desktop, whatever screen it is, it is our window into just the the largest amount of distraction ever available to man. Interesting that our project plan never ever made it onto a screen, that project plan. That project plan, that sheet of flip chart paper is what was stuck on the wall. And I took a picture of it before we started. When it was finished, it was all crossed off as we started to work it through. But we didn't spend any time putting it on a screen. A lot of people have their key measures for their business are embedded into Google documents or they're on Excel spreadsheets. And the problem with that is they're on a screen, and it's a distraction of another kind. I like my KPIs to be on physically on the wall, on a whiteboard, on a poster, on a board that's getting updated, because then everyone can see it and there's no distraction. They're not hidden away. Email's another one. I mean, Christ, there's such a lot of rubbish in there. I mean, obviously, you should open my emails, obviously, but apart from that, I mean, really, your ability to handle that is a key factor. And again, you don't have to handle your own emails. That stuff can get in your way, it can bog you down, and your ability to tackle those things will make a big difference. I think I'm going to try and cram a lot into that. I've got one more little bit I want to do on here. I'm hoping I'm hitting a few spots with a few of you. But I want to talk one final thing before I finish and hand over to Ainsley. I need to talk about your money barriers, because I'm determined to find my fit and get this in to so many of you today, because there's a lot of things. They're not conscious, a lot of these things, but they're things that you are doing or thinking that are stopping money flowing to you. And let me try and explain it. You know, we usually think that in order to get more, we have to do more. But what if, instead of trying to do more stuff, we got rid of the things that get in the way of bringing us money? And this is all linked together to what I've just been talking about. But I've got 9 common money barriers for you here. Look at how many of these you have. Some of them are going to come around again. You've seen them before. Okay, lack of a plan is a big barrier to money. Literally a proper physical written down on a single sheet of paper. This is my plan. When we do this, 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 and this, that will happen and that will lead to this. That's a plan. Doesn't have to be, it's not a long document. A one-page plan is perfect, but the lack of a plan is a big barrier to you getting the money that you want this year. Lack of skill in places can be a money barrier. You know, the ability for you to be able to write marketing copy is the biggest, most important skill as a business owner. Because when you can write marketing that persuades people to take action, you'll never, ever be poor. Lack of skill might apply to some of you. Lack of confidence applies to a lot more. A lot more. Part of my mission this year is just to somehow, I want to inject people. I want to show them that they are so much more than they realize and they could achieve so much more if it was just a question. Just get out there. Yes, you should run your own little local event to promote this. Yes, you should go on video, because you're authentic and you're real and you ooze integrity and people will resonate with your message. But lack of confidence is a massive money barrier for some of you in this room. People then worry about what might happen. Oh, what if? What if? You know, oh, I'll put the video out, but oh, I don't like how I look. I don't like how I sound. I don't like the sound of my own voice. Get over your own bullshit, because that's a big money barrier. You're going to see some videos from real live members this afternoon. Okay, none of them, with the greatest respect in the world, none of those videos that you're going to see this afternoon have taken from the One Show, you know? They're not beautifully polished productions, but every single video you're going to see this afternoon was effective because it was real and it was authentic and it was a communication that built a relationship, and in every single case, it led to business and led to sales. And too many people don't do stuff because they're worried about what if. They don't think about the what if it works and the money that will come. Lack of targets is a big money barrier. Even with my inner circle members, where I sat down and said, what do you want to achieve this year? Some of the answers that came back, I mean, they are masterclasses in wiffly, waffly, piffle, because they did everything they could. Just to be clear, there's lots of really good answers as well, just to be clear. But there's more than a handful of inner circle members who couldn't bring themselves, even with me, to share what the goal was. And part of that comes from the lack of fear of, well, if I say it, I might have to do it. What if we fall short on it? I always have big targets. We hardly ever hit my targets. But we do make good... Oh, that was me for a minute then. Oh, die quick. It might be a lead, mate. It might be a lead. So lack of targets is a big money... If you haven't got targets, you will not be as wealthy at the end of the year as if you were if you had targets. It's a simple black and white binary thinking. Leading, not reacting. People that lead set targets. You should set targets for yourself and for your business. We've talked about perfectionism already, how it gets in the way. We've touched a little bit on procrastination. When you schedule your day, like those sheets that I showed you, there ain't no scope to procrastinate. It disappears. Overwhelm disappears. Procrastination is gone. Now we've got focus. Now we've got clarity. Now we've got a target to aim at, and we've made it visible. Now we can start to do this stuff. And without these foundations, you won't do the stuff that I've got for you later on today. Oh, that was nice. It was interesting. It was lovely. You'll feel enriched. You'll know more as a result of today. But fuck all, I'm in your business. And your life won't move forward, and that's not why I'm here. We've got to deal with distraction, which we've talked about, and you've got to deal with your own bullshit as well. And the own bullshit is all the stuff, all the reasons you're telling yourself right now as to why this stuff doesn't apply to you. That's what that is. Because it does apply to you. It applies to you even more if you're thinking that than if you're not thinking that. Do you know why it applies to you?
You're reacting, not leading.
We might see him again, old President Moss. Listen, that's my starter for today. I've just tried to lay down the foundations for you. In a nutshell, binary thinking, okay? Black and white, yes or no. Take control, and that requires you to shape your daily habits and deal with those money barriers. I know I went through them quickly, so I will, as I say, these slides, all the slides you've seen up to now, there's 193 of them, according to my screen down here, but they'll be available as a PDF for you on Wednesday with those timesheets so you can start to utilise it properly. I know we promised you a fabulous festival of follow-up, but without this foundation, what's going to follow now wouldn't come to pass. That's why I took the decision to lead and not react by doing this session here, and it's why you need to do it again. We'll hear it one final time.
You're reacting, not leading.
And he's right, you know, you are reacting, not leading.
You've been listening to the podcast from the Entrepreneur's Circle, featuring Nigel Bottrell.